Folks, I want to remind you again about our friends over at Canopy and their line of CBD products. I used to wake up several times during the night, which made it hard to get out of bed in the morning and left me really feeling less than myself all day. But I can tell you from personal experience, my sleep has dramatically improved since I started using Canopy Nighttime Blend. Now I sleep straight through the night and wake up refreshed every morning. If sleep isn't your issue, they have a variety of products that can help you out. If you struggle with muscle aches after a workout or a day out on the golf course, if you have first tee jitters or your knees lock up in your backswing, check out trycanopy.com. That's trykanibi.com and look at their selection of tinctures, creams, and gummies that can give you the edge after you exercise or while you're out on the golf course. And really, just make all of your days better. Their hemp is 100% grown in the U.S., and you know we love that. And when you choose Canopy, you are choosing prized harvest, expert extractions, and precision manufacturing with zero artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. So if you need help sleeping through the night like me, relief from muscle aches, or the pressure of a busy day, give Canopy a try. Again, that's trycanopy, trykanibi.com. And if you use coupon code TNT, you're going to get 20% off your first order. Again, trycanopy.com. You're going to be glad you did.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
Okay, now joining us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Vikings fullback turned great actor, Ed Marinaro. Let me give you some background on Ed. He's from New York City, played his college ball at Cornell, where he set over 16 NCAA records and finished second in the Heisman Trophy balloting in 1971. He was named first team All-Ivy League each year from 1969 to 1971, and he was the first running back in college football history to rush for over 4,000 yards in his college career. He actually finished with 4,715 over his three college seasons. In 1971, he won the Triple Crown by leading the nation in rushing yards with 1,881. He also led the nation in scoring with 24 touchdowns and 184 points, and in all-purpose yards as well. He rushed for 200 yards in a game five times in 71, and he did it 10 times over the course of his college career. All three seasons, he averaged better than 5 yards per carry and 175 rushing yards per game. Of the top 10 single-game highs for rushing yards in a game in Cornell history, Ed has 6 of them. The bottom line is he was so good that 50 years later, he still holds just about every rushing and scoring record in Cornell history, and he remains the Ivy League's all-time leading rusher. He was inducted into Cornell's Athletics Hall of Fame in 1978 and the College Football Hall of Fame in 1991. He was a second-round draft pick by the Minnesota Vikings in 1972, and he played in the league from 72 to 1977 for the Vikings, Jets, and Seahawks. Following his NFL days, he became a fantastic actor. We all remember the great job he did as Officer Joe Coffey on Hill Street Blues. Last fall, you probably saw him in A Unicorn for Christmas and The Many Saints of Newark. And we're excited he is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Ed, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you. Sorry I'm a little late. Making dinner here.
No worries. Ed, I want to start by going back just to the early days for when you fell in love with the game of football, and who were some of your idols growing up?
Well, you know, I was born in New York City, and I moved to right across the George Washington Bridge to New Jersey, which is where I went to all my schooling, all my high school, grammar school, high school, and grew up being a fan of the New York Giants. And first pro football game I ever went to was 1960 with the New York Titans in the Polo Grounds. They played the Houston Oilers, and Billy Cannon was a rookie for the Houston Oilers. I don't know if you guys remember him, but he was a Heisman Trophy winner out of LSU, great player, had a really great career with the Oakland Raiders as a tight end. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, I was a Giant fan, and I grew up rooting for Y.A. Tittle and Del Schaffner and Roosevelt Brown and those great Giant teams, Frank Gifford. Andy Robustelli. And I guess that's kind of where I, you know, like most kids that era, like I just always dreamt about being a football player. So that was my my introduction.
So Ed, what or who enticed you to go play your college football up in Ithaca for Cornell?
Well, you know, I don't know. I still can't explain. I probably had 30 or 40 scholarships to play football, and I had basketball scholarships. But there was some sort of an allure for me to play in the Ivy League. I just thought that I knew at that point that, you know, that kind of meant something. You know, I don't know if I had that much confidence as an athlete to think that, I wasn't going to, never thought about playing in the NFL at that point. I just thought about playing college football, and, you know, I knew about the prestige of being an Ivy Leaguer, and I was lucky enough to get into Cornell, and it was probably one of the defining moments in my life. It was a great experience. Got to play on a really good team and have close relationships with all my teammates, most of my teammates from the time I was there. So, and then my son, who's a freshman now at Cornell, he's sort of, hopefully he'll follow in my footsteps, but, you know, he's a legacy, and I'm very proud of that. And it's, Cornell is part of the, Marinero, lore, if you will.
And Ed, you played in 27 college football games, and in game number 24, you rushed for 272 yards against Columbia. You break the NCAA all-time career rushing record. Tell us what you remember about that day and when you broke the record.
Well, it was funny. I the week before, I believe, we played Yale, and I had a pretty good game. I don't know how many yards. I think I went over 200, but I kind of got a little banged up toward the end of the game, and I was 7 yards short of the record, the NCAA record. So it you would think it was by design that you could, you know, be that short and have a whole week to kind of have people, you know, coming up to Ithaca and, you know, wanted to talk to me, and, you know, knowing I was just 7 yards shy. So the week before, it was kind of a lot of stuff going on, as far as the anticipation of my breaking the record. So it's probably the week before I remember most. I think I broke the record on my second or third carry, and it was pretty exciting. You know, the Ivy League. You know, it's the Ivy League, but we kind of had a packed stadium at Schoellkopf Field that day, which was really exciting. I mean, people were very enthusiastic about the whole university was excited about, you know, the attention, the national attention that they were getting, and I was really proud to be, you know, the person that was creating that kind of.
Bob, questions for Ed?
That was great to speak with you, Ed. You know, I have some great memories, you know, growing up right near Yale and, you know, watching you as a kid in grammar school, you know, it was big. When Ed Marinero came to town, that was like, you know, like a pro coming. And, you know, I still go to the Yale Bowl. I mean, the last 25 years as a media member, Ed, but been going there since a kid. Do you have any special memories of coming up to New Haven?
Well, I'm going to give you a little trivia question that you can, I don't know, use one day. There were only four people who played pro ball and college ball at the Yale Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I was one of them when the Giants couldn't play at Yankee Stadium and they used the Yale Bowl. I played the Giants when I was with the Vikings. We played at the Yale Bowl. So there weren't many guys who played college ball and pro ball in the Yale Bowl. That's probably what I remember most.
That is pretty cool. And, you know, we had mentioned, Ed, your 71 season, which was an amazing, and, you know, your Heisman chase. And I read that you almost averaged 40 carries per yard, per game. That, which, to, when you look back, you know, I'm sure back then, you know, you want to get fed the ball, you want the rock and everything. But years later, do you look back and say, whoa?
You know what? You know, it's the game is so, obviously, it's changed so much since then. And you know, you look at college now, you look at the pros, you know, the running backs, you know, they don't play the whole game. They guys go in, they play three plays, and then they send somebody else. Very situational. Very few players, running back, they play every play, which is, you know, kind of interesting. And they, you know, even the guy from the 49ers, Samuels, what is it? Dabo? Samuels?
Debo Samuel?
Yep. Yeah, Debo. I was just reading about him, and they were talking about he's a non-position guy, which I've never heard that expression before. But, you know, I think this guy is going to sort of revolutionize maybe the game. There, you know, if you have a guy like him who can run, catch, you know, you got to get him the ball as much as you can. And, it, you know, sometimes it's easier to hand it off to him. Put him in the backfield. And there are plenty of guys in the league who, you know, could move around like that. So it'll be interesting moving forward if he sort of redefined, you know, that whole kind of position, or if you will, or offensive threat. We could play anywhere. I mean, as a running back, the guy's a big guy. He's as big as a running back. Why not put him in the backfield and just pitch him the ball? And there's a lot of players. I the guy I can think of is the Seattle Seahawk guy, CK Metcalf. I mean, this guy could play any position. And you know, putting him out on out wide, and just the only time he touches the ball, if he could throw it to him, it's kind of a waste when you have a talent like that. My point is, I don't think today anybody plays the whole game. You know, they rotate running backs. You know, he'll, like I said, he'll play two or three plays and bring somebody else in. And you know, I don't know why, but maybe just to keep them fresh.
And I want to talk about when you get drafted by the Vikings in 72. You're coming in as a rookie, and on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage at practice as a young Purple People Eaters defense. What was it like for you trying to make a name for yourself as a running back, going to practice, trying to play well against those guys?
Well, the Purple People Eaters, we had a pretty formidable defense. Fortunately, you know, we didn't do a lot of live tackling, whatever. It wasn't like we had a couple of scrimmages, and they were daunting. As a rookie, you know, when you, first time I walked into the locker room, and these are guys that I had looked up to and admired, you know, as a college player. And all of a sudden you're in the locker room dressing next to them. It's pretty awe inspiring. I'm sure it's, you know, not a whole lot different today for rookies when they go to their first training camp and they're dressing alongside of guys they looked up to and admired, and like, 6 months earlier, watching them play on television, and all of a sudden you're dressing next to them. It's mind blowing. I played with the Carler and Jim Marshall and Alan Page, Fran Tarkenton, and you know, those guys are legends. And you know, here's a kid coming out of Cornell University. Well, and no matter, all rookies are just, you know, it's awe-inspiring to be in the locker room with guys like that. And they were all great. And, you know, it was a thrill, you know, getting to play with them. And you know, at the time, it's just a, you know, it's a very different mindset, you know, when you're 22 years old. But, you know, at this point in my life, I look back and see how, you know, lucky I was just to, you know, get to have played with those guys.
And the next season, you guys go all the way to the Super Bowl, Super Bowl VIII against the Dolphins, who were the defending Super Bowl champions. And you know, I'm curious to get your perspective of what the Super Bowl was like back in Super Bowl VIII versus the spectacle that we have for the Super Bowl now.
Well, you know, I played in back-to-back Super Bowls. Played in Super Bowl VIII, that was against the Dolphins, and played in Super Bowl IX against the Steelers. We played at Tulane Stadium. And I guess the best way to describe, you know, the difference was that the halftime show was the Tulane marching band. it's quite a bit, you know, different than Snoop Dogg and Janet Jackson that they have today. But it was, you know, it was still, obviously it wasn't the game it is today. You know, all the pregame hype was, you know, what it is today. Certainly the money wasn't what it is today. But, you know, it was some extra dough in our pockets just getting to play there. And most of us weren't making that much money. So even though we didn't make a ton of money, it was significant to get to the Super Bowl. It was great. I think, you know, the conference championship game is, you know, losing that game is worse than losing the Super Bowl. Because you just get that close and you don't, at least I can spend the rest of my life saying I played in two Super Bowls instead of when you lose that conference game, you know, you have to spend the rest of your life telling people you almost played in the Super Bowl. So, it was a thrill, you know, but it was a long time ago. So, you know, my memory it was cool, I'm sure, but it wasn't, you know, again, it wasn't like the hoopla surrounding the game today. We came in and we stayed in a hotel, you know, far away from Miami and New Orleans because Bud Grant didn't want us being distracted. It was almost like just another game for us. But, I got two rings, which is nice. You know, one day when I'm down and out, I can sell one of them. So.
And you got the opportunity to go back to New York to play for the Jets in 1976. And you had two of the best games of your career that year against the 49ers and at home against the Bills. To come home and get the ball 31 times, rush for 119 yards and a touchdown, and be in the same backfield with Joe Namath and Richard Todd. What was that like for you?
I playing for the Vikings was a great experience. I mean, I played for a great coach, Bud Grant, Hall of Fame coach. We were a great team. Being a New York guy, it was sort of a dream come true to get to play in New York City. And, you know, I was a free agent, and it was an interesting time in the NFL. I was part of a group of free agents, the Roselle rule, which made it almost impossible for people to go from one team to another, was declared unconstitutional in 1975. So I was one of about five or six players who really were the first true free agents in the NFL history. John Riggins was one of them. He left the Jets and went to the Redskins. I second Calvin Hill left the Cowboys, went to the Cleveland Browns, and I was able to leave the Vikings and sign with the Jets. And there was no compensation that the Jets had to give up. I was true free agent. So that allowed that to happen for me. And, you know, going to the Jets was, at that point in my career, it was just exciting. It was exciting to be back and, you know, being able to play in front of my family and my friends, and certainly playing with Joe Willie Namath was a thrill. I got to play with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in my career, and I caught passes from them and took handoffs from them, and, you know, that's something that I'll always remember. But, you know, living in New York City was a whole different experience. You know, living in, you know, Minneapolis was a great town, but, you know, I was a New Yorker, so I was pretty much at home moving back there. And I got hurt that year after I had those two good games. I had a foot injury on Monday Night Football against the Patriots the following week. So that was pretty much the end of my career. I hung on a little bit longer, got one more year in, but I was never the same. But, it was, I kind of have no real regrets about that. I'm glad that my career went the way it did. If I hadn't gotten hurt, I don't know how long I would have played. I'd never been hurt before, either in college or the pros. So it was sort of an aberration for me to be injured and pretty much have it end my career, which it did. But it sort of got me into another area of my life earlier than I might have had I not got hurt. I was probably the kind of player, I probably could have played 10 years easily. And, had I played that long, I'm not sure I would have gone to Hollywood. You know, I would have probably gotten a real job. So, everything worked out well for me.
Bob, one more for Ed before we let him go.
Yeah, sure, Ed. Chris had mentioned your accomplished acting career, and all of us enjoyed it back in the day also. But tell our viewers and listeners when did you first get the acting bug, and how did you first get your foot in the door?
I became friends with Joe Namath back. Actually, I met Joe the first time I met Joe. I was a senior in college, and he's just a terrific guy. Still a good friend. You know, I still talk to him. I'm going down to Florida in March to play a little golf, and I'm gonna have dinner with him. We're just hanging around with him. I met people out in Hollywood, and they encouraged me to kind of take a shot at this whole Hollywood stuff. You know, I was a good looking stud back then. And I had some opportunities, and when my career was over, I was 28 years old when the last team I played for, and I just said, let's give it a shot. I moved to Hollywood, and I just became a full-time actor. I did what most actors do. I got in an acting class. I studied. When I auditioned for roles, and, it took, it didn't happen overnight, but, I got some pretty good breaks relatively early in my career. The biggest one was Hill Street Blues. I'd been out there for 2 years, and I got a shot at Hill Street, and I ended up doing 6 years on the show, which was great and sort of jump-started my career being relatively new in Hollywood, but getting to work on a show that was so critically acclaimed and, great actors and great writing and great directors. It was a great place to kind of learn and learn quickly and learn from really, really good people, just being around them. And it probably kind of elevated my stature in Hollywood quicker than could have ever hoped for, just being associated with such a quality show, and being so new in the business. You know, I probably people thought I was better than I really was, but, yeah, it was great. And, you know, I'm fortunate. I've been doing it for 45 years. I'm still doing it, you know, still work now and again. As long as it doesn't interfere with my golf schedule, I no, it's still fun. You know, I still, you know, I've done a couple of movies in the last year or so, and fortunately, I don't have to work. It's something that you know, that can excite me a little bit. I'll do it, but it's you know, it's been a great ride. You know, and the good thing about acting is that you don't, you know, people ask me if I've retired from acting, and you know, actors, they don't retire. They either can't remember their lines anymore or they die. So as long as I'm, you know, I can still remember my lines and I'm breathing, you know, I can still act. So that's kind of a reassuring. You know, you don't have to really retire.
Ed, before we let you go, how can our listeners stay up to date with all the great things that you're doing, whether it's online or it's on social media?
You know what? I'm not a real, I don't really do a lot of social media. You know, I'm an organic type of guy. If it's worth knowing, you'll find out. I mean, if I'm going to be in a movie, I'll post it on Instagram or whatever. If I'm doing something that is of mild interest to anybody, I'll post it. But, you know, I'm kind of a low-keyed person. You know, I don't, I mind my own business.
Well, Ed, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come and be a part of the show. We hope you'll come back and do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me, and be safe, and go Big Red.
Thanks so much, Ed.
Take care, and all the best to you and your family.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is the great Ed Marinaro. We've got our next guest, Blaine Bishop, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Blaine right on the other side of this real quick station break.